To glow in the dark.
Glow in the dark. Glow in the dark.
This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. The adventures of Alibi Jones continue, and we are getting near the end of this book. The Adventures of Alibi Jones, Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. We've got Chapter 36 on the way today. And when we last left Alibi Jones, he was talking to his father. That was his dead father, though, BC, and he was talking to him in his head, or not quite his head, but his mind, because Alibi was kind of disembodied for a bit. He's just been brought back into his body, and his father's spirit or soul or whatever it is has just reminded him to breathe. In the meantime, Alibi's friends are working on his body. Now that they've got Alibi back in it, they need to drive the ancient enemy alien's consciousness out of it. This thing that took him over. The Darkor tech whiz Cat thinks he can do it by modifying a transpace nullifier. And we shall see. That's happening in this penultimate, I love that word, penultimate. Penultimate chapter of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest. Chapter 36 is on the way on Glow in the Dark Radio. First, a little bit of book news. A is for April in Alibi Jones, and I've got a great special for you for the rest of this month. You will be able to get the Alibi Jones Omnibus, the ebook that has all the first four books, three novels and the short story collection, for just 99 cents. That is Alibi Jones, Alibi Jones and the Sunrise of Her, Alibi Jones and the Time War of the Devrisium, and the one we're listening to, Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest, those four under one cover. The Alibi Jones Omnibus, the ebook. It's not in paperback, it is an ebook. Just 99 cents. You can get more details at glowinthedarkradio.com. And the other bit of news I've got, the Vermont Sci-Fi and Fantasy Expo is happening next weekend, Saturday and Sunday, April 27th and 28th. At the Champlain Valley Expo in Essex Junction, the Essex Junction Fairgrounds there. I've got panels and a reading I'm going to be doing. Those are all happening on Sunday. My stuff is all Sunday. I'll be there Saturday checking it out. But yeah, Sunday 10:30, I'll be doing writing a novel. 11:30, I'll be on the Podcasting 101 panel. And then at 1 o'clock, I'm on a self-publishing panel, Self-Publishing 101. I've got my reading at 2:30, and then at 3:30, I'll be doing a panel on writing for and creating comics. So that's all coming up this coming weekend, not this weekend, but next weekend, April 27th and 28th, the Vermont Sci-Fi and Fantasy Expo at the Champlain Valley Expo in Essex Junction, Vermont. There's more details on Facebook. I've got a lot of posts there and links there, and you can follow the link in the show notes to find out more about that. All right, that is it for news. We've got Chapter 36 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on the way next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
What the hell is this, the wonderful Billy Flynn?
Just some podcast that's supposed to be geeky. Podcasting's Rich Siegfried.
Did you try it?
I'm not going to try it. You try it.
Screw that noise. I'm not going to try it. Hey, Flynnstress, let's get Mikey.
Do you mean critically acclaimed comedy rock star Mikey Mason, who hosts the Beer Power Time Machine podcast?
Yeah.
But he won't listen. He hates everything.
Hi, I'm critically acclaimed comedy rock star Mikey Mason. I don't often listen to podcasts, but when I do, make mine Geek Radio Daily.
Hey man, that's a different promo.
Between love and madness lies Geek Radio Daily.
That's kinda accurate.
There are some things money can't buy.
GRD is free online.
Maybe she's born with it. Maybe it's Geek Radio Daily.
We'll take it.
Geek Radio Daily. All the geek without the weight. GeekRadioDaily.com.
Now, here's Chapter 36 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. Is this real? You're asking the wrong questions. There are right questions? That's a good one. This is just circular. If you're really BC, tell me about how we met at the Wishing Stone. If I'm your imagination, I'd just be telling you what you remember. Talk about circular. Jeez. Okay. Tell me something I don't know. Tell me about my mother. In the cruiser's cargo hold, Alibi floated near dead on a stretcher, with Cat at work below him, modifying the transpace nullifier. On the bridge, Anita couldn't sit down. She paced back and forth around the small open space available. Kit kept an eye on the cruiser's controls from his perch in the pilot's seat and spoke to Katie, again awake and alert, over the comm, as they worked on syncing her ship's computer up with their other two.
"Done," Kit said. "Thank you, Katharina Ramsey."
"You're welcome, Kit," she said. She signed off. Anita frowned as she paced. She no longer cared for Katie Ramsey. The girl had betrayed her trust, fooled her. She'd been wrong about Katie, misjudged her. She didn't like being wrong about people. After a time, Anita figured out the girl was trouble, a user. All for the best, Katie and Alibi were no longer together. But they had been a couple for a while, and if Katie's presence or voice could help bring Alibi back? Anita was glad Katie bothered to come when she'd asked, through channels, of course. Anita walked across the bridge again, stopping at the pilot's seat. "Do you think Cat knows what he's doing?" Anita asked Kit.
"Yes," Kit said. "Though it is my family prerogative to keep him humble, it is well known among our generation of Dakur that Katra Fundler Grundler is one of our best and brightest. But do not tell him I said that. I will deny it." "The comm is open," Cat's voice said over it. "However, after he has said such nice things, I am precluded from commenting on the brightness of Kitrafundler Grindler."
Emily snickered. Anita seemed annoyed. Give her a look. "What?" Emily said. "It was funny. He made a joke. Cat's funny."
"Thank you, Emily,"
Cat's disembodied voice said over the comm.
"Kitrafundler Grindler never told me of your comedy, your humor. I do enjoy learning how they work." "He only thinks he is funny," Kit said. "I think I must ask for some quiet," Cat said. "My apologies."
"None needed," Anita said. "Sorry, Cat." Cat tried to concentrate as he reprogrammed the nullifier to not only talk to the cruiser, but also to use the ship's memory as its own, so he could teach it the ancient enemy's bioelectrical energy matrix model they'd developed. Human tech was different from Dakor, but he had plenty of experience with both. It wasn't a problem. Still, the complexity of the model made his head hurt. He shut his eyes for a moment. Cat pictured the process, watched it flow through his mind. The necessary steps became clear. He followed them. With a click and a whoosh of power, the nullifier switched over to the ship's computer.
"Oh," Cat said.
"What's the matter?" Anita asked over the comm, hearing Cat's disappointment.
"As soon as I switched the nullifier over to the ship's computer, it demanded more power," Cat said. "The unit nearly went dark. We will need to feed the unit more energy so it can construct the field we require."
"Do you need help?" Anita asked.
"Sure," he said. "We'll need to run another power conduit, maybe two. This thing is trying to suck in energy through too narrow a straw."
"I'll go back down there," Emily volunteered. "See you in a minute, Cat." Cat was still fine-tuning the nullifier's connections to the ship's computers when Emily arrived. She smiled a little at the strange sight, the cat-like Dakur on the ground, hunched over the nullifier, working away underneath a stretcher with Alibi Jones lying on it, floating above. "You got it working," she said.
"To a small degree," Cat said. "I mean, it seems so. But it is calling for so much power? I cannot yet be sure."
"All right," Emily said. "Let's fix that." While Cat continued fine-tuning the nullifier, Emily headed for a side panel in the wall of the cargo hold,
Cargo occasionally required power while it was transported. Most holds had a stash of conduits on board for the purpose. Emily grabbed two long cables out of the cruiser's supply of eight and brought them over to Cat.
Good, he said. Thank you.
Cat went back to his calibrations, so Emily began rolling out the conduit cables, running them from the nullifier back to the power supplies.
Yes!
Cat let out a little yip of excitement.
What?
Emily asked.
It holds, Cat said. The nullifier is holding the pattern. I am using the computers of all three ships as a memory buffer so it can do so, but it is working!
Now a bit less absorbed in the work, Cat noticed the conduits were ready.
Ah, good! Power! Thank you, Emily!
Cat began attaching the first extra conduit.
You should meet some of the project scientists, Cat, Anita said over the comm. I know our Dr. Krishnavurti would enjoy meeting you and talking shop.
He invented this nullifier, among other things, did he not?
Cat asked.
The friend Alibi calls Krish.
Yes, Anita said.
I have met him, Cat said. We rescued him from Argentium. Spoke about getting Alibi off of Ceres. A good man. I admire his work.
While Cat and Anita talked, Emily looked at Alibi to see he was still breathing. The sickbay stretcher monitored his vital signs. It would have warned them if anything had gone wrong. There were no alarms, so he should be fine. He looked okay. From what Emily understood, Alibi was still in there, but so was another ancient consciousness, sort of possessing him. Cat was adapting the nullifier to blast that other consciousness out without blasting out Alibi's energies, too. Emily smiled. She couldn't help herself. She liked Cat a lot. Never having met a Darkur, she didn't know what to expect when they told her she would be serving with one. But these last few months working with Cat had been amazing fun. Had he been human, she might have asked him out. Emily frowned and shook her head. Best not to go there. Alibi was a trip, too. He was a horrible manager, but he seemed to know it. He hadn't questioned any of her business decisions so far. He wasn't too horrible for being a spoiled rich kid. Growing up poor on Earth, Emily had heard all about the new generation out in the stars. Her generation, but they weren't her peers. Space travel cost a lot of money. Made it out of her reach, unless she joined the safe. Now, here she was, right alongside him. Them. Alibi Jones wasn't as self-centered as some people described the rest of the explorers, colonizers, and settlers. He seemed to have a good heart. Didn't hurt that he also looked good. Okay, she promised herself she wasn't going there, either. Can't get attracted to the boss, bad juju. It was a good thing that early on he'd acted kind of weird towards her. That wasn't attractive. Helped her keep her distance. Build her resistance? No matter. For the first time since she'd enlisted, she was enjoying herself. Every day. Surprised to be getting paid to do this. A wild and new feeling. Emily looked from Alibi back down to Cat, now attaching the second extra conduit. She found herself hoping this all worked out, so she could keep enjoying herself. She felt weirdly selfish. "Is that going to be enough?" she asked.
"What?"
Cat asked. He looked up, confused. Emily could almost see his mind racing behind his eyes. "Do you want me to run another power conduit for you? Do you have enough power?"
"Oh," Cat said. "Please, yes, run another, would you?"
Glad for a purpose, Emily snagged another coiled-up conduit cable from storage and ran it from the power supplies over to Cat and the nullifier.
"Just leave it on the deck there, please," Cat said.
Emily felt a little stupid. Hadn't realized she was standing there holding the conduit's end watching Cat work.
"You should go back up to the bridge," Cat said.
"Why?" Emily asked. "If you really thought it would hurt humans, you wouldn't be doing it to Alibi, would you?"
"Yes, I would," Cat said. "I am. I think this could hurt you humans. But Alibi does not have any other alternatives that I know of, so we try this. But we also try not to expose the rest of you."
"And what about you?" she asked. Cat hissed a short succession of hisses. Darkur laughter.
"I am sorry," he said. "I know that you are still learning about us. We Darkur. I should not laugh. but we were discussing it before. Humans are directly descended from the ancient enemy, from the starseeds that landed on Earth eons ago. We Dakur, on the other hand, are not their descendants.
Oh no? Really? Emily was struck by the superiority she heard in Kat's tone.
No, he said. We are a separate race. Indeed, we know they experimented on our race, as they did with many of the races they discovered. Savages.
I'm surprised, Kat, Emily said. Don't think I've heard you get angry about this stuff before.
It is angering, Kat said. You do not understand, Emily. The memory of these creatures of the past, the ancient enemy, was kept alive by their servants, those who came to be called the Eldred. The Eldred would not let we other races forget who the ancient enemy were and what they had done to us. Though well in the past, that pain is still very real.
Yeah, but even the Eldred are long gone now, she said. Kat stopped himself from laughing again.
Long gone?
Kat smiled his Dakur equivalent of a smile.
You humans think in very short terms. Your long-form time concepts are quite limited. And flawed. There seems to be rapid and constant deterioration of the long-term memory form, which the human mind compensates for by constructing fantasy elements to fill the gestalt. Better a whole that is not wholly real than an incomplete memory. You all think 20-some-odd years is a long time, and get very hazy on the details.
I have a great memory, Emily protested.
I am sure you do, Kat said. I am surprised, then, that you have forgotten.
Forgotten what?
That I said you should go back to the bridge, Kat said.
Emily did her best to give him a look. Then she turned to make her way back up to the bridge.
Well, Bobby, maybe I was wrong, Hector Ruiz said. Maybe we shouldn't have come out here.
Bob Bond nodded. The two men and a skeleton crew aboard the Libra Campista arrived minutes before in the asteroid-laden system where, word had it, the giant ghost ship they'd run into months earlier had appeared and exploded. Bond had been able to convince Hector not to take both ships out and to run with a minimal crew in case there was trouble.
Not gonna say it, Bond said.
Yeah, just think it really loud, Hector said. I got you, Bobby.
Damaged and torn-up safe ships started showing up at the depot shipyards, their crews talking about a giant black alien ship that exploded and did the damage. As soon as he heard the news, Bond knew Hector would have to investigate. Hector had gotten a bit obsessed trying to get information on the giant old ghost ship. After he'd reported it to the Solar Alliance, all info on the ship vanished. Hector cursed himself for reporting it in the first place, then cursed the Solar Alliance. He kept trying to track down leads in his downtime. Bond knew Hector would have to check out this new explosion of evidence. All he could hope to do was moderate his response. He got Hector to just take the single ship, small crew. The scene presented challenges. The asteroid field was extensive. Apparently, planets didn't form in this system, they just smashed each other into little pieces. A few ships remained, the remnants of a safe dreadnought group, the Dreadnought, a Stinger, a cruiser, and a couple fighters, arrayed themselves against a small cluster of civilian craft.
Maybe we should go, Hector said.
Sounds good to me, Bond said. Not gonna try to talk you out of it.
Just want to run a couple of scans first, Hector said.
Bond sighed.
Whoa, look at this, Bobby, Hector said.
He flipped his scanner screen's feed to the main view screen, lighting up the bridge with a view of jagged white chunks of light scattered randomly all around them.
What am I seeing? Bond asked, as he squinted, trying to read the blown-up scanner image.
What's left of that ghost ship? Hector said. Those are pieces of it, I guess. Shards left over after it exploded. They're implanted on asteroids and ships, floating in space all around us.
We're being hailed, Hector, by two ships at once, Janice said from the seat behind Bond on the bridge.
She multitasked as part of their small crew, handled navigation, engineering, and the official ship's comm. The safe Stinger ship broke off from the group and started moving towards them.
Give me the non-safe one first, Hector said. You sure about that? Bond asked. With the safe moving towards us? Do it, Janice, Hector said. We may not get another chance, Bobby.
This is Anita Capituna on the free trader A.D. Foster with Kitra Fundler Grundler of the Dacour Diplomatic Families, hailing and welcoming you, Libra Campista, a woman's voice said.
Should we respond? Janice asked.
Hector held up his right hand.
Hold on, he said. Anita Capituna, Bond said. Didn't she used to be president or something?
Prime rep, Bobby, Hector said.
You know, I know that ship and her captain. It's Capituna's stepson, that there Alibi Jones, had to talk to him for Gentry.
Oh, Bond said. So why isn't he hailing us?
Good question, Hector said.
Open the channel, Janice.
Hector cleared his throat.
Hello, Anita Capituna, Hector said. An honor to speak with you and your esteemed Dacour colleague. I'm Hector Ruiz, captain of the Libra Campista. I've met your Alibi Jones before. Surprised it was not him hailing us.
Alibi is injured, Anita said. We're trying to save him, but the safe is threatening us.
I see that, Hector said. Sorry to hear about Alibi.
We need your help, she said.
Hector smiled a sad, wry grin. I don't think we can help you much here, Madam Capituna, Hector said. We're a little outnumbered and a whole lot outgunned.
I'm not looking for a fight, Anita said. I'm looking for witnesses. Will you stay and witness the interaction between us and the safe ships? For me and the Dacour Embassy. You will be compensated, paid well.
I will have to get back to you, Hector said. We now have our own safe threat to consider.
The Stinger ship had drawn even with the Libra Campista and continued to hail them. Hector had been watching the incoming message alert light up as he spoke to Anita.
Put them through, Hector said.
Finally, the voice said. Libra Campista, this is Safe Stinger 705. Please vacate the area.
We're here to investigate the situation, Hector said. This is not the Solar Alliance.
This is a dangerous safe operation, the voice said. You are asked to leave for your own safety.
Once again, let me explain, Hector said. This is not the Solar Alliance. You have no jurisdiction here. I made sure to set a subspace relay before coming out here beyond the comm grid. We are streaming an encoded visual report as we speak on an open channel. Anything you do will be witnessed by millions, so please do not shoot us and cease from threatening our safety.
Libra Campista, this is Safe Dreadnought 701. An older man's voice cut through on the comm. Admiral Leonard here. What's the problem? This is a military operation. You have to leave.
No, I don't, Hector said.
Admiral, yes. You and your military ships are here, but this is not the SA. You have no jurisdiction. And the former head of your own government and a Dacour diplomat have asked me to stay and witness your interactions with them. Far from having reasons to leave, I have reason to remain.
Now, just a minute.
The voice was cut off as Hector cut the comm. He called Anita back.
We're here, he said, for a little while.
Good, Anita said. Anything that keeps the Admiral honest and buys us more time to save Alibi.
Thank you, Hector Ruiz.
Well, if you think it will help, Hector said. He called the Admiral's channel back up. Hello, Admiral, we're...
You cut me off! That's a violation of...
Admiral, you forget! We are not in the Solar Alliance, Hector said. We're also not going anywhere.
This is a safe military operation, and you will leave and meet...
Admiral, we're official witnesses for Prime Rep Anita Capituna and the Dacour diplomatic families, Hector said. We are beyond the declared borders of your government and your jurisdiction. Please, calm down.
Hector waited. There was no blustery response this time.
What do you want, Libra Campista? Admiral Leonard said, finally. What brings you out here, anyway?
Funny you should ask, Admiral, Hector said. Mostly, and this is the funny part, what brings me out here are lies and obstruction by the safe. I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for your people lying about the old ghost ship that just exploded here.
There was no such ship here, the Admiral said.
It must be in your nature in the safe to lie, eh? Hector said. Look, I reported it to your people in the first place. Check your records. Then you all made it disappear on me. So I kept looking. When your Dreadnought group ship started landing on Depot, all ripped up, talking about the ghost ship, I had to come see for myself. Now I've been asked to see for others as well, it seems. Given your track record, I understand why the Prime Rep wants witnesses. So she doesn't disappear, eh?
She's not the Prime Rep, the Admiral said.
Not anymore, sure, but you still call her that, don't you? Hector asked. A term of respect, even after she's out of office, eh?
Nico Constantine is prime rep now, the Admiral said.
Capituna isn't even governor of Ceres Central anymore. She's no one, a nobody.
A civilian, you mean, Hector said.
Good to hear where you're coming from, Admiral. Would have thought a former prime rep, and a former governor too, eh? Did not know that part, thank you. Would merit some respect from you. No, huh? That's fine, Admiral, but I'll let you in on a little secret. Out here, we're all nobodies. Even you.
Yeah, but I'm a nobody with a big ship and lots of men and guns, the Admiral said. If there weren't two encrypted feeds keeping an eye on us, nobody would be the wiser.
Spoken like a true thug, Hector said. Though I probably shouldn't antagonize you with the truth, eh, Admiral?
I'm no thug, I'm military, through and through, the Admiral said. I shit the safe colors.
I bet you do, Hector said. No contradictions there. Now, please have your stinger ship here back off. Thank you. He cut the comm without waiting for the Admiral to respond. Hector sighed.
I hate bullies, Bond said.
Me too, Bobby, Hector said. Me too. Hector's bravado worked. The stinger ship turned away. It flew back towards its former perch next to the dreadnought. Bullies, Hector said. You're absolutely right, Bobby. Gotta show them you're not afraid. And let them know the grown-ups are watching. He laughed at his extended metaphor.
Think we should fly over? Join Capituna's group of ships? Bond asked.
Nah, Hector said. Let them do whatever it is they're doing. We bought them some time. We'll give them a little space, too. Keep watch and witness from over here. Maybe look around and chart where some of those pieces of that ghost ship landed while we're here, eh?
We've got a little more time, thanks to our new friends, Anita said. How is it coming along down there, Cat?
Almost ready to try it, Cat said.
Anita, Emily, and Kit listened with full attention as Cat spoke over the comm.
Given the complexity of the ancient enemy's bioelectrical matrix's pattern and the energy required to create it, the nullifier will not be able to generate a sustained field, but rather a single long pulse. It may burn this nullifier out in the process. We'll have one shot once it works.
Is there anything you need? Anita asked. Any help?
In the cargo hold, under the floating stretcher, Cat smiled.
No, he said. Here we go.
Cat turned on the nullifier's field generator. The lights of the ship dimmed as the device drew down the power.
It is building the pattern now, based on the one in memory, Cat explained.
He stood up and backed away from the nullifier, an alibi above it. No need to be right on top of it. Cat could almost see the energy pattern building as he watched, a sort of clear lightning dancing in the air beneath the stretcher. He knew his imagination was supplying the suggestion of visuals, helping him see what he wanted to see, which was clear as the nullifier clicked off. The lighting came back up to normal.
What happened? Anita asked over the comm.
I'm not sure, Cat said, but it didn't finish creating the pattern. We never got to the pulse.
He walked back over to the unit and crouched down to examine it. It looked fine, just switched off. He turned it back on. He breathed a bit easier as it came back to life.
Cat, this is Katie, she called over the comm. Some of what's left of the Rodei is helping me, keep my ship together. They say your pattern is flawed.
They do?
Cat said.
Who are they to say?
They're woven into the inner workings of my ship, Cat, Katie said. They're now a part of the computer you're using to generate the pattern.
Oh, Cat said. I did not know this.
They want to know if you'll allow them to make a tweak to it, Katie said.
A tweak?
Cat asked, alarmed.
A small alteration, they tell me, Katie said. You're currently bleeding energy. They say a flaw in the pattern keeps it from sustaining itself long enough to fully materialize and be used as the basis for the field, for the nullifier.
I see, Cat said.
I'm glad that made sense to you, Cat, Katie said, because I was just relaying what I heard them say in my head. No idea what that meant.
It makes a certain sense, Cat said. Tell them to go ahead.
Done, she said.
I will try to create the field, the pulse of it, at any rate, once again, Cat said.
He started powering up the nullifier,
reconnecting it to the three ships' computers. Hey! The voice sounded like Alibi Jones, but Cat knew Alibi was not in control of his body. Cat thought the ancient enemy personality had been contained, subdued. Well, at least the body was restrained, strapped tight to the stretcher. Is anyone here? It's me, Alibi! Cat ignored him. Alibi couldn't see him below the stretcher. He turned on the device's field generator. The ship's lighting dimmed, and the nullifier again began to build the bioelectrical energy matrix's pattern. When it was whole, it would generate the pulse as it attempted to create a field.
It is building the pattern again, Cat said into his comm,
talking to the others on the bridge as he straightened up and backed away from the nullifier and the stretcher. What is building what pattern? Who are you there?
Catman, the man on the stretcher called out.
The possessing mind is again awake in the body of Alibi Jones,
Cat informed them. I am Alibi Jones, he said, but he sounded all wrong to Cat, even through the translator. The cargo bay darkened as the lights dimmed a bit more.
You are an invader, Cat said. A parasite to be removed.
Let me out of these straps, the invading parasite said. Cat approached the stretcher. Good, the man said. I knew you'd... Hey, where are you going? Cat ducked beneath the stretcher to check on the nullifier one last time. Whatever the Rodé's tweak was, it had worked. The nullifier was ready to generate the field. What are you doing? The man called out. Cat tried to ignore the man. He straightened up. He should back away before it triggered its...
pulse.
Too late. The nullifier generated its field. A pulse of it, anyway. Before burning out completely with the complex effort, as Cat planned. The lights came back up. Cat looked down at the body. It was breathing. That was a good sign. Alibi looked to be out cold, once again unconscious. Another good sign.
I think it worked, Cat called over the comm.
What? That was Anita. Cat? Cat felt odd. Something was wrong.
That was Chapter 36 of Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on Glow in the Dark Radio. Uh-oh. Something is wrong. Cat thinks what he just did worked, but he was right there next to it when it went off, and there's something that's not quite right. So we're going to find out just what happened to Cat in our next chapter, which is the final chapter Alibi Jones and the Hornet's Nest on our next Glow in the Dark Radio. Quick recap of the news. A is for April and Alibi Jones. The rest of this month, you'll be able to get the Alibi Jones Omnibus ebook for just 99 cents. And I want you to join me at the Vermont Sci-Fi and Fantasy Expo in Essex Junction next weekend. It's at the Champlain Valley Expo in Essex Junction at the fairgrounds on the 27th and 28th of April. My panels I'm on and my reading are on Sunday. I'll be on writing a novel at 10:30, podcasting 101 at 11:30, doing a self-publishing panel at 1 p.m., and then a reading at 2:30, and at 3:30, writing for and creating comics. So you get the chance to check that out. Again, that's next weekend at the Champlain Valley Expo in Essex Junction. And that's all for this week. Our music is by Juan Carlos Quatordio. And I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio.